But we've been talking about Moses, this amazing personality in the Old Testament, in the second book of the Bible called Exodus, which is just one of those kind of boring words that many of the Bible books are titled in boring ways, which is okay to criticize because the titles were all added later. They weren't titled in the very beginning. So we can retitle them if we want, and we're not really messing with anything. I would call it the Great Escape or something cool like that. I mean, Exodus just means to go out, and you know, the main part of the story is how Moses led the Hebrew slaves, also called the Israelite slaves, out of Egypt into freedom. And so he went from this kind of richy rich, spoiled, you know, kid growing up in the royal palace to a fugitive on the run. Everybody's seen Prince of Egypt, right? It was awesome. And so, but what we're seeing in Moses' personality is, even though he's known as the greatest leader ever in the history of Israel, no prophet has risen like Moses in Israel ever. No one has ever shown the mighty power and performance, performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in all the sight of Israel, from splitting the Red Sea to all the plagues on Egypt to show Pharaoh who was really in charge, that it was the one true God that had real power, calling down bread from heaven, all these miracles that happen. You're gonna see one pretty incredible one that God just orchestrated through Moses' leadership. We're gonna see one here today that's pretty amazing. But all these leadership qualities, yet it didn't happen overnight. Moses, he was exiled because of a crime he committed. He had all these flaws in his personality. He was very relatable, very human, very very ordinary, very full of fear of stepping up to God's calling. And so if you've ever felt like, I don't think I'm the right person for this, God, Moses is like the best example of somebody that tried to talk his way out of serving God because he was just too insecure to do it. Yet God kept with him and said, don't worry about it. When I'm with somebody, you can do anything. And I'm always going to be with you. And so the whole reason we're piecing together this mosaic of Moses' personality is to see how God can use each one of us, no matter how scared we might be, how insecure, just how daunting the calling might be. God can use us to do amazing things. The prophet who spoke face to face with God, who who prayed on behalf of his people towards God, changed his mind, changed his plan because of Moses' pleas to not give up on the stubborn Israelites. Okay, so Memorial Day weekend, that was an awesome prayer, Keith. Got a fun little battle story for you guys today. And I shy away from, I don't like the violence in the Old Testament. It's one of the things I just don't do well with those stories. But this is the first kind of war story that happens, and there's more to come. But this is the first time Moses is tested in his leadership, because he's got a couple million people roaming through the wilderness. They're just happy they escaped out of slavery, and they're just wondering where God is going to lead them. They don't want to conquer or take over anything. They just want to be free. But they're making some nearby tribes a little nervous, because here's all of a sudden a swarm of people out of nowhere. And the best analogy I can describe the Amalekites to you. I'm a little bit on a sci-fi thing right now. Just saw the new Star Wars movie last night. not going to say anything about it, you know, to like.
Okay,
this is the best analogy I can think of. So, but you got to go Trekkie with me a little bit. So, Star Trek. So basically, these guys are Klingons. All right. So this is the old school Klingon look back in the TV series. And so what that means is you just never know when these guys are gonna show up and think that you're infringing on their territory, and even if you get, you know, a little close, they just get super sensitive about that, and so they go on the attack. And so that's what Moses is up against. He's leading the people out into freedom, but he's made some local tribes a little nervous, and so they pounce on Israel. And so we pick the story up in Exodus 17. Do you like the old versus, I mean, the next generation, the whole Klingon look got, you know, different with Worf and stuff. And, all right, so no, okay. All right, we'll move on from the Trekkie analogy then. Okay, so here we go. Back to the Bible. While the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek. Okay, a little history behind Amalek. There's some bad blood between the Amalekites and the Israelites anyway. Amalek is a descendant of Esau. Okay, now remember the story, because we did this in our old school series over the summer. Remember the story about the twins, Jacob and Esau? Okay, so Esau was the big, burly, older brother who came out first, and Jacob was a little bit more of the scrawny, you know, kind of hung around the house a little more, while Esau was off, you know, hunting, and he was a little more, you know, burly type. But Jacob was, and his name means conniving. He was a little, you know, he tricked his older brother out of the birthright and then, you know, left home because Esau was so angry he was gonna kill his younger twin. And so Jacob grew up in a foreign land because of that. In the meantime, God changed his name to Israel. He went from a conniving personality to a prince with God, which is what Israel means. And so you've got now, you know, these populations have grown. Jacob or Israel had these 12 sons who now, you know, hundreds of thousands of descendants over 400 years have come from him. And Amalek, again, was a descendant of Esau. So he's got, you know, Esau's heritage in him. And so there was always this today. Flip on the news. I mean, that's where all this Middle Eastern tension comes from, is those two twins and the birthright and all that drama that comes with that. And so here we get a taste of it here in this story of Amalek's people and Israel's people. So the warriors of Amalek attack them. Moses commanded Joshua. Joshua's kind of his second in command, his young lieutenant. Choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding that killer staff that just can do anything, it seems like, that God gave me. And remember the big deal God made about Moses. Don't forget the staff. Take the staff. Remember the staff. You'll be able to do killer stuff with the staff. The staff can do anything. And so I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. And we'll see what happens. So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a nearby hill. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, and this should teach you a lesson when we're cheering on our sports teams, right? Keep that momentum going for the home team advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, whenever the crowd quieted down, it's that same sort of thing. The Amalekites gained the advantage. Moses' arms soon became so tired, he could no longer hold them up. And so here he is holding up the staff. You know, maybe he was doing it one at a time. His arm would get tired one at a time. I found a good picture here. Let me read you this next paragraph. So Aaron and Hur kind of saw what was going on. Found a stone for him to sit on.
Then they stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands. So his hands held steady until sunset. As a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. And so Moses, you know, last Sunday we talked about how Moses was trying to do so much on his own, trying to solve all the problems of the people. And he was working 24/7, day and night. Everybody was coming to him with his problems. And remember, his father-in-law came to visit him and give him some encouragement, and he saw what was going on. He's like, Moses, you're going to burn out in weeks. And who knows how long? I mean, we know the story. It was 40 years that he had to pull that off. You need to think long term. You need to delegate. You need some help. You need to shift this burden and to others to help you carry it. Remember how Jethro said, you know, get guys in charge of tens, hundreds, you know, thousands, you know, kind of get this organized here. And Moses wouldn't have been able to survive if he didn't take that advice. But again, that's what that fed into him being such an effective leader, was listening to that advice. And in this story, he learns this incredible lesson that, you know, he basically said, hey, Josh, I'm going to go up there and I'm going to handle it with that staff. He didn't think through how long a battle could take and how long he's going to have to actually hold up his arms. And he didn't think for asking for help. But Aaron and Hur came alongside. Remember, Aaron's his older brother. Hur is, you know, a friend. Come along and support Moses. You know, they see he can't, once again, even though he's trying to do everything on his own, he just can't. And it's such a lesson to all of us that we try to go through life. I don't know, are you guilty of this? I'm always catching myself, you know, going, oh gosh, you know, after the fact, finding out that somebody would have been so much better at doing that. I'm getting a little better at that. And I'm learning to, you know, ask for more help, you know, and try to, you know, kind of envision, okay, how much is this going to take? How can we spread that around? That's why we're doing what we're doing tonight. That came out of a planning meeting. Why don't we, you know, we're all kind of looking at the three or four or five of us, you know, around the table and going, well, why don't we ask the whole church family and see whoever can, you know, hang out on a Sunday night after church and help out. That'll get some more hands on deck. Let's get more people involved. And Moses learned that lesson in a very clear way of how he needed help in his life. And it's this, you know, it's just easy math. But there's this powerful little passage in another horribly titled book of the Old Testament. Can you even pronounce that word? It's just a crazy Greek word, Ecclesiastes, that you're never, okay, you might figure this one out. You've had Spanish, Ecclesia, what does that mean? Ecclesia, is that close to anything? Ecclesia? Church? So Ecclesiastes is, I'm in Ecclesiastes right now. I'm in Ecclesiastes. I'm the guy standing up in front of the gathering talking. And so King Solomon was the Ecclesiastes. It's just the first word. Most of the time, the book is titled after the first word, whatever it happened to be. The monks that did the little titling were a little lazy about that. They didn't really come up with creative titles. Really, it ought to be called The Diary of the King. It's this incredible, like, personal life notes of King Solomon. It's a little bit of a dark book. It's a little melancholy. I mean, it's he basically, you know, talks about how if you don't have God in your life, what really is worth it in this world? There's nothing new under the sun. It's the phrase that kind of repeats itself throughout his personal diary. So here's one of his observations. I've made another observation in life. It sucks to go through life alone.
is basically what he says. Two are better than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. He scribbles a little more in his diary, and he says, you know what? Three are even better. And he uses this great little image. For a triple braided cord is not easily broken. And it just connects with the story of Moses and Aaron and Hur about how three friends working together can accomplish so much. And when you've got just a couple people in your life to come alongside you, it can make such a difference. A triple braided cord is not easily broken. I wanted to show you guys, I've got a little story I want to share with you, and I've got a little video for this, and then we're going to get warmed up with, I promised you a little craft for tonight. This one's Rick certified too. In fact, I did this much while you guys were talking about your broken bones, so that's how doable this is. Church colors. So this happened a few years ago. I was showing, we've been watching a lot of women's softball in our home because my little third grader is into softball, and so we've been watching anything we can find on TV. And this was a story that happened a few years ago in college, in women's college softball, where the gal in the red, she'd never hit a home run before in high school or college at any time in her softball career. And she happens to get one over the fence. Let's go to the video here. Let's see if I can do this. It was her mom happened to catch this on video. Okay, so she's at the plate. She's got it's 0-1. She's got one strike against her. Now I'm gonna pause this and kind of pick it up here in a second so you can kind of see what's going on. Hopefully this will kick in. If it doesn't, I'll tell you the story, but the video is pretty cute. Hey. All right, there's right down the middle, strike one. Goes over the wall. Everybody's cheering. But then the crowd goes kind of quiet, right? And you don't get to see it in the video. But right as she was rounding first, she twists her ankle and goes down. And so here's the rule is you hit over the fence, you gotta touch all the bases. If you don't, you're out. And so, and none of the coaches, teammates, you aren't allowed to have anyone extra on the field. It's just the runner. And all the other runners, you know, they're not allowed to go back. They already tagged home. They can't retouch the bases. The best you could do, if you have to sub out an injured player that hasn't tagged them all, is put a pinch runner on, but then you just get a single. The pinch runner is would be on first.
They needed to run.
And this would be the go ahead. This would be the go ahead run. But this is what happens. A couple players from the other team ask the umpire, "Well, we're here on the field. What if we were to help her around the bases?" And the ump says, "Well, there's no rule against that." She's got to touch all the bags. That's part of the rule. So you see how they kind of dip her down. Got third. Who The whole team is just falling.
Her first, he announced her first home run of the season, her first home run of her life. And so what I love about that story, there's a lot going on there just about being, you know, about good sportsmanship and seeing the big picture. This was a playoff game. And the other team ended up losing because of that three-run homer and was eliminated from the playoffs. And I mean, and they knew that going in, that, you know, the other team had taken the lead, and they still made that choice to honor this, you know, that she deserved that home run. How can we, you know, get her across? But she wouldn't have gotten across and been able to have that experience of a home run without others literally holding her up. An even better story than Aaron and her, in my opinion. But just this great illustration of what it means to have others in our life and the impact we can have when we take time out to notice, be aware of, take some action on someone that could use our help. But I love that. That little home run story. So I wanted to ask this question, a couple questions about our own cords in life. Who gives you support? Do you have at least one other person, I hope a couple people, that you know you can rely on? And then, you know, who needs your support? Who can you be that Aaron or her to, and the Moses in your life that you can surround? So I think I got a fun little thing for us to do. Nick, can I get you, actually, let me pick on one of the teams. So can you just go around? Well, no, it'll work to pass around. Sorry. So what we've got is, and the girls insisted that we used a bead on this, because I was asking, you guys know how clueless I am when it comes to crafts. And well, it would be so much fun, you guys. You know how you're always making those little bracelets and stuff? How do you do that? Because it'd be fun to do that in church, or a bookmark or something. And they're all, seriously, Dad, you don't know how to do that? And I'm all, no, I don't. Show me how. Seriously, you don't know how to throw a curveball? Well, then, you know. But I got a little.
I know.
So sensitive. But okay, so they showed me. It's so easy and it's so cool. So baskets going around. Everybody grab three cords. All sorts of colors to choose from. And what you do.
And a bead
if you want. And then Denise even put in some toothpicks in case you need help getting the string through the bead. But what I would love for us all to do is to make a little triple braided cord. And as we're doing it, and it's really easy, what you do, you just tie a knot in the end. I know everyone knows how to do this, and I'm the only one, but it'll make me feel smart a little bit if I get to explain. Okay, good. So I'll just flip over. That's you. All right. So what you do, and I did this while you guys were just chatting earlier. Super easy. Okay, so you tie a knot in the end. Great knot. And then you just start, you go left over the one in the middle. Then you got a new middle. You go right over the one in the middle. And left over the one in the middle. And the next thing you know, they're all like, I was pretty happy for that being art and crafts.
We're
braiding.
Yeah, I don't know how to braid, so we're
trying.
I need you.
See, all right.
I need you.
And the nice thing, you know,
I don't have long hair.
You don't need to anchor the material stiff enough to wear. You don't need to
chase
anchor it or anything. It's not just fun, it's serious too. As you're braiding this,
pick who you are.
Say again.
Because you're one of these. You're one of these strands. So, you know, you can be, you know, say I'm the blue one. Who gives you support? Maybe who in my life supports me? Try to maybe think about somebody besides your spouse if you're married, you know, because that's probably what's going to come to mind. And then who needs your support? Maybe that's the other color. And just start braiding with those others in mind and just kind of see how they all sort of wrap with each other and how we're connected. And by the time you get down, you're going to feel, instead of just kind of flimsy individual strands, how nice and solid that triple braided cord is. And I hope it's a nice little reminder, whether it goes on a wrist, an ankle, you know, as a bookmark, or hangs from your rear view, or whatever. That it's just somewhere where you'll see it, and it will remind you that you're not alone. You're not alone. You have others, and you have an impact on others when you give yourself in that way. And so, let's just, maybe Keith will come up and play a little bit while we're kind of reflecting and making our little braids. And I'll say a little prayer and we'll go from there. I can't pray and braid at the same time.
pretty good. Pretty proud of that.
Table when you feel led in your own timing. And our prayer team will be in the back of the room. We'd love to pray with anyone who would like to pray.